Hey, what's going on, guys? Welcome back to Advices Radio. I'm Scott McNally. You're listening to episode number 126. And today I have something for you a little bit different than the norm. This is an impromptu conversation about current events. Basically, Skip and I decided to hop on the mic and hit the button on Facebook Live. And before you know it, we're joined by a bunch of our friends. So this is a conversation about current events and the key players here. We have Victoria Felkar, John Meadows, Scott Stevenson, Skip Hill, and myself. So I hope you guys enjoy this conversation. I spin it toward bodybuilding a little at the end, but for the most part, guys, this is like a non-bodybuilding-centric episode. We'll get back to the bodybuilding stuff tomorrow, though. Guys, I hope everybody is doing well, and I hope that you are staying safe.
So hey, guys, listen here. Listen, what are we doing here? What are we even doing, Skip? People are asking. They're like, it's Tuesday. What are you guys doing? You're recording right now. What's going on?
Yeah, tell us. Everybody's at home. Everybody's bored.
Yeah.
We're bored. My inbox is not full of potential clients right now. I don't know about you guys. Maybe it's indicative of the fact that I'm not very good at what I do. I don't know. But the point is, there's not a whole lot to do right now. And we just figured with everything going on, you know what? We'll get out. We'll kind of shoot from the hip and just fucking talk about random shit. John, I'm curious if the current situation has actually, I don't know, put the Ohio drug epidemic kind of on the second or third burner. I'm not taking a shot at Ohio.
No, that's interesting because it's funny you mention that because I haven't heard a thing about that, the opioid crisis. I think just in what Scott said, I think those things are true, but I don't think we're anywhere close to getting to the point where we're really suffering. I think when the economic impact really hits them and they realize they can't afford to pay their rent, they can't afford to get the kind of food they need for their family. I think when those things start to happen, which I think are going to be, if something doesn't change in the next 2 weeks, it's inevitable. I think it's going to happen, at least based on the economists and the bankers I talk to and so forth. I think that's when things get really bad. And you know, I shared some of my thoughts on that and it got shared like 1,000 times. And then I just took it down because I just felt like I was being negative, but it's a fact. If something doesn't change with, just putting the economy back in action, we're going to have another Great Depression. And that's not, and listen, I see the positive in everything, but there's no way you can avoid it. If you look at a business and, you know, outside the employees and then people who supply them, whatever, if you look at kind of the whole chain, supply chain and everything, and you look at the impact, it's amazing. I mean, it's huge. And, you know, here in Ohio, we had 190,000 people file for unemployment. I think it was last week. That's a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And that number is going to skyrocket. And I think people are trying to make this out to be a debate of, do you care about the stock market or do you care about saving lives? And that's not it. That's not it at all. And when I see people say that, I just think, what a moron. Mm-hmm. It's about another Great Depression where people can't feed their families. They can't get jobs. And then, and you know, another example of this is this bickering over the bill. And, you know, you have Democrats saying it was loaded to help companies. And from what I saw, maybe part of it was. But then the Democrats are trying to put in stuff on solar panels and the UPS and all this wacky shit. There's a list a mile long. So they clearly, these two parties are just bickering and fighting. And in the meantime, the small business owners, like, time is critical for them. If something doesn't happen in the next 2 weeks, it's going to be really, really bad. And all these people, these politicians are kind of insulated from this. They don't even know what guys like us even live like. They live in this utopia, right? They don't understand. They don't care. And that's a frustrating thing to me is Scott's talking about people coming together. And I think people like us can, but the people who are supposedly leading our country continue to just bicker and try to get their way. And like, these are the leaders of our country. And, you know, so I think in terms of what Scott said, I think those are some really good thoughts, but I think we're a long way from that. But if something doesn't change in the next 2 weeks, there'll be fallout to where it really is going to be, hey, man, we're all in this together. Because right now, instead of people coming together, they're actually fighting more is what I see. There's actually more fighting. I mean, mm-hmm. Facebook fighting, it's at an all-time high, right?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
it's at horrible. An all-time high. So yeah. I'm just blabbering on here, but those are just some of my thoughts that I have.
Victoria doesn't – oh, there she is. She has her headphones on now. I'm curious because you're in Canada. I wonder, a slightly different governmental approach, are you having the same type of issues with funding, with helping the citizens out, helping small businesses, or is this kind of just more of a mess in the United States right now?
Well, I'm not in Canada at the moment because I can't go home. So there's that. I got a cold at the Arnold, and my town actually that I'm from is on like complete lockdown because it's a population of under 6,000, and there's at least 3 confirmed cases at this point in time because somebody oh, wow. came back from Mexico and he owns one of the 2 grocery stores. So was helping to restock, and then it just exploded. So my town is like literally on lockdown. I got a cold. I wasn't allowed back in, so that's why I'm still here. But it has kind of created a little bit of isolation for me. I know that each province is like, each state is doing their own thing. The province of Ontario, which is what I'm from, they just did like the total lockdown. So there is certain like subsidies. Like, so for example, I got an email saying that, and I'm not sure if this is true or not, but every Canadian will get $150 to stay home. So just to stay home, like that's kind of like the incentive. I don't know how they're measuring this, but there's that. There's also, they're doing, I think, $1,000 for every Canadian that is a taxpayer to help buffer the effects. My sister, though, she works for a municipal library, and she was saying they're already starting their layoffs, which is, she's so sad because she's senior management, and that there's really nothing that they can do about that because if the library is not open, you can't keep paying everybody who's working there because they're not getting the funding from above. So I think there is some economic consequences that are already happening and they're already being kind of seen. I do know though that like our prime minister is taking a different approach than Trump, but that's nothing new. It's unprecedented for our lifetime. That's
right.
Kind of so it sounds I'm like it.
It sounds like the financial, what the government is doing in Canada then is at least similar. There's parallels from a financial standpoint to try to help out the citizens.
Yeah.
What about with the and especially because you're smarter than the rest of us, I am wondering. I ask everybody this, but mm-hmm. I know myself. I touched on this earlier about my thoughts have started to evolve over the last handful of days. Like I think a lot of people's have because there's just more time to process. One of the mm-hmm. things that we're dealing with right now is we have a lot of downtime. So we get to sit, we get to argue with people if that's what we want to do too, but we get to think and process and really kind of mull over what's going on and the impact that it's going to have, which I think helps to create more anxiety too, but nonetheless, we have no real alternative. Mm-hmm. What I'm wondering is, and I have come to this and I wonder, I don't want anybody to think I'm a dumbass about this, but this is something that I thought, why is it, do you think that we are not isolating the vulnerable society with all these restrictions or the vulnerable portion of society, but instead isolating everyone? And the main reason being, and I understand we can spread, the healthy people can spread, but I totally get that. But if the vulnerable society is isolated, I'm not convinced that just isolating them wouldn't be helpful and not be economically catastrophic at the same time. Am I way off here? I mean,
no, you're thinking way too logically.
Yeah,
way too logically, man. Right.
Yeah, I think. I mean, John, do you want to take it?
Well, hindsight's 20/20, but I'm very clear on what I think should have happened. First of all, China should have let us know what was going on. But there were cases in December and people were flying all over the world from Wuhan and all over China. So this has been in the U.S. since at least December. Possibly I'm even here in November, but it's been here. So when you see there's X number of cases, there's probably tens of thousands more cases out there. But anyways, to Skip's point, if we would have at least known we could have said, you know, people who are at risk, you can absolutely quarantine them, keep an eye on them, keep a close eye on them. And now what the counter argument is going to be is that's not going to work. Somehow somebody will get to them. But I personally believe that's what should have happened. I believe they should have taken people at risk if they identified and tried to do that, you know, in senior citizen homes, like up in Washington, where, you know, that's where all the deaths started here in the U.S. If those people would have been, for example, quarantined, and maybe they could have saved lives there. But Skip, I don't think you're out of your mind. I think you're thinking logically. And what happened after that was then you had, you know, people wanting to close borders. And I'm not one of these Democrat versus Republican guys, so don't take it that way. But you had some politicians wanting to close borders, and you had other people saying, well, if you do that, you're racist, you're a xenophobe. And now it's, why did you wait so long to close the borders? Like, it's a no-win situation. So, you know, and before all this broke loose, even I thought, man, that seems a little premature to close to shut down flights. But I didn't have all the information at that time. So it's easy for us to speculate now. I agree with Skip. I think that would have been a better approach. But it's a tough situation. And now we've got the economic problem, too. So now we handle this poorly, this one problem. And now we have another problem with it. So now not only that do we have to solve the virus problem, now we have to solve the economic problems. Now we just dug that hole real deep.
Mm-hmm. It reminds me of, like, I mean, medicine at its core, like, it's reactionary. There's not a lot of preventionary kind of things that usually get put in. And then all of a sudden you've got one kind of issue that comes up, and then now you're throwing, like, you know, it's throwing off something else and polypharmacy, and it's just like this giant mess. And that I feel like Skip, to like what you said, is it, are you thinking irrationally? And I think no, I just think there's a kind of an overarching lack of rationality in crisis modes, and that you get people that are going to respond in vastly different ways, that becomes really problematic when you've got to make policies or when you have to create some really firm things. Because it's like, you're going to piss people off no matter what you do, and you're going to hurt people no matter what you do. And my mom was a very kind of high up in medicine, but she was a manager for hospitals. And she talked a lot about triaging and how awful triaging is, making a decision of who's going to live, who's going to die, who's more vulnerable, and that it's kind of like what we're doing right now, in a sense, is we are triaging our population, and that certain decisions maybe were made more out of fear or more out of a quick judgment without actually thinking through all the different variables involved.
Dr. Scott, you still there?
Yeah, I'm just listening. I think there's a PC issue with doing what could perceive as being ageist, for instance, if you look at the older population being more susceptible.
Right.
So the politicians want to get reelected. They don't want to, you know, step in the wrong direction and lose votes. And their job is to get reelected. That's how they make their money, is by staying in office, regardless of what policies they stick to or what their opinions are. That's really what they want to do. But I think part of it also, and this is just from the few things I did listen to, is that there was a sort of a vast range, even among experts, in terms of what we knew and know about the nature by which the virus makes its way through a population. To what extent, how does it get transferred from one person to another? Can you get it from a toilet seat? Can you get it from a sneeze? You know, how long can it survive outside the body? And I looked into it, like, supposedly at least one paper that I saw suggested that it is I think it's the SARS virus. It binds with like 20 times the affinity, actually, the SARS virus. That's the one I recall them comparing it with, to the angiotensin converting enzyme 2 enzyme located in the lung. Mm-hmm. So it gets into the lung, and because of the nature of the virus, has a molecular bonding there with that enzyme, and that's how it makes its way in. At least that's one big major. So people were talking about, you know, can we use an ACE inhibitor that would change the shape of that enzyme and potentially use that? So people didn't know really how. So then you just hit it with a hammer, You could have used a screwdriver and very selectively kept the economy intact. Like you said, Ken, it's a great idea. But if people don't know, you know, that a screwdriver and a chisel is going to be the best way to keep the economy intact. And even if literally it's just, you know how it is, if it's just 1% loss, if one person gets sick and dies, and that absolutely utterly sucks, in the context of keeping the economy alive, that one person could be what makes or breaks someone's job as a policymaker or a politician. So sure. They got to go the safe route and just say everyone. I mean, this was just an interesting thing, and I didn't balk at it. It's no big deal, but I'm stuck here. We talked about before, and we need another part to try to get my truck up and running. And I told the guys, I'm like, hey, I'll go get it. I got their, they gave me a town and country to drive around in, so I got a car if I need one. I'm like, where is it at? I'll go grab the thing so you guys can have it and start working tonight. And they talked with their people who provide the parts, and like, no, we can't do that, because they don't want people driving around. And like, you know, I'm like, hey, I didn't balk at it one bit, but I'm thinking to myself, just take the box and leave it outside on the sidewalk,
right?
And you know, I'll go pick it up, you know. Yeah. And that's like that's the same as anyone else delivering it, but that's kind of a logical solution, but. I'm not going to, you know, but there is obviously some minimal, perhaps infinitesimally small risk that in our PC, you know, point the finger at other people type of society is not one that people are willing to do. So it takes someone in a policymaking position who's willing to take that heat, you know, and a lot of times even by taking that heat, they just that means they're not going to stay in that position.
But I can see too how it may be easier to drop the hammer, put in these huge restrictions so that everybody pays attention, and it is, I guess, to make society see, you know, this is significant, this is huge, versus had they just gone to try to isolate the vulnerable population, and it's just perceived, you know, as well, it's just like the flu, it's just like this, which a lot of people were still doing. So I have to wonder if it might not and you know, you make a good point, John. Hindsight is, it's very easy for me to sit here and sound logical when I'm not making these decisions a week and a half ago or a week ago. And I get
so much unknown, like, you know, and I think they're still unknown.
Yeah. And I just wonder if it's easier than to drop the hammer and then pull back those restrictions versus try to catch up and go, oh shit, oh shit, oh shit, we didn't do enough. We didn't, because they didn't know enough.
It's like,
yeah,
prep.
And that makes sense. Yeah. There you go. Yeah. Everything comes back to prep, damn it.
Everything.
You know, the one of the real interesting things I saw was, did you guys see the canals over in Italy? How. Mm-hmm. The water was clear and there's animals in there now. And I saw some like overhead pollution things like over India and all these countries where now the pollution's going away. Yeah. That makes you kind of think, doesn't it? Like, oh, wow. Yeah.
How quick too.
That made me really think like, man.
Who's the virus here on the face of the planet?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, even just people spending more time with their families. Like, I know that it's in a stressed out climate, but in terms of like, social connectivity, it's like, yes, we're social isolating, however, for people that might say work two jobs and don't really get to see their kids or build certain types of quality relationships, like I think there definitely is a silver lining of sort if you are open to seeing it and being okay with the uncertainty. And I think that's one thing that like Scott and I've talked a lot about of is just the uncertainty surrounding this, because nobody knows. We don't know. I mean, even if you just look at the numbers of people that have it, there's no agreement of how many people in each country or each county has it. It's changing all the time. Yeah. And so it's something like just the idea of we're now all living in a really uncertain situation and clawing at things that make us like feel a little bit better, whether that's some people, you know, looking to social media nonstop, or others that are taking that step back and actually like spending time with their families or getting outside and walking. Like there are so many people in Scott's neighborhood that you never see people walking, and there are so many people out walking. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
I have to say, Victoria, just for the record, you do have the best eyebrows on the podcast today. I just want to point that out.
I get trolled so much for them.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, that's too bad.
I came out of the womb like this. That's what people don't realize.
I've seen the pictures. I've seen like the 2-year-old pictures of Victoria. Same eyebrows.
No, eyebrow.
But with blonde hair. Could you picture her blonde? Because it was a fact.
All right, I'm giving the podcast back to Scott. He's supposed to be the HNIC anyway.
You're doing great, Skip. I feel
terribly
like
politically correct, but
Skip, you're doing fantastic. We don't even have anything else to do other than to chat here. I mean, we did get some questions, so I can look around for those. I was actually trying to mess around with the microphones. We're rigging this up now. Victoria came last minute. John came last minute. So we are both listening through the sounds coming out of these headphones right here.
Is this like a show, or are we just chit chatting?
Both.
Shooting.
Yeah, kind of. It's a little bit of both. But
Skip, catch you know, John up while I look for questions here.
Listen, I'm happy either way. I thought we were just chit chatting, which is cool too, just to catch up with y'all.
That's pretty much what it was, Skip. So you explained at the beginning. Deal is what we're for anybody else who's just tuning in too. You know, normally we don't record today, but Skip was figuring like, hey. A lot of people aren't working. Everybody's looking for something to do. Why don't we start a podcast? Why don't we entertain people? You know, just try to make everybody's day a little bit better. And Skip, I feel like I don't even know what I was going to say, actually, because I'm trying to think. Do something, Skip. Just take this.
You're going the other direction. And I told Dr. Scott earlier, it's not about really about providing information. It's still self-serving for me. It always is. It always has been. It always will be.
You know, I have a dry erase board here in my RV, and I wrote something on it before I started my, I wrote three things on my, and I did a, put a Tai Chi or Yin Yang symbol in there, but I wrote Amor Fati, which means love your fate, whatever it may be. It's something that Nietzsche has been, quoted as saying, and I put memento mori, which remembers death, which means remember death, meaning death comes for us all, and carpe diem, seize the day. Everyone knows that one. Ooh, and yeah. those are words. I don't have any tattoos, but those would definitely be tattoos. If I were constrained to pick three, those things would go if I were using words or phrases. And they all kind of fit. Like people have a situation where, you know, now they're stuck at home with their family members, and they're recognizing, you know, I can either like fret about this, or I can seize the day and go for a walk and recognize that I've got a time down to spend with my kids that I wouldn't otherwise when I'd be working my 9-to-5. And, you know, we have death, you know, it's not a crazy impending doom, but it's there right in our face. So what do you do with the time you have left? Like, there's a little bit of a scare that you might end up with this and things go the wrong direction, and it's happening to people. So this is a wake up call. And those things are always going to be true. Death's always coming for us, and you can choose to love your fate. And if you want to, you can seize the day, or you don't have to. So anyway, I just thought I'd toss that in. I was listening to Victoria talking about the beauty of these situations and what she's seeing. And there is, you know, another side. You can kind of do with whatever situation, whatever you choose, and you can make lemonade from the lemons.
You guys,
I would make that a tattoo.
Do you guys remember that movie called The Adjustment Bureau with Matt Damon? Did you guys see that movie?
I didn't see that one.
I didn't see it, but I remember it.
So the concept is there's fate. There's this big plan, and he falls in love with this girl, and he's supposed to be the president, and she derails him off that. So basically, these higher powered people that control fate try to keep changing what's going on in their lives to keep them on their path. Skip mentioned like character development in movies, and I'm like a concept guy. I love concepts, and I thought that's a really cool concept. Like there was another movie where time, how long you had left to live, was your currency. Justin Timberlake was in, I think. But so yeah. Like if you went to get on the bus, you would make a deposit, you'd lose a couple minutes off your life. Mm. And that was the currency. That was, mm-hmm. I thought conceptually that was phenomenal. So you just made me think about that when you're talking about your fate and what's going to happen and, you know, how much do you control? How much do you not control? Who knows? Who knows, right? So.
Yeah, John, you said to me one time to connect this to bodybuilding, we're talking about, it's a couple of years back, and you and I were both, you know, still competing, and and you said, you know, you never know when it might be, you know, your last show. So if you can still do it and you want to, then do it. And that resonated with me. Like, you know, I did 5 shows last year. And I think about that, you know, so when the opportunities are there, just recognize that they won't always be there.
So, you know, I wonder, so much, does go, like, no, go ahead. Go ahead, Scott.
There's just so much that can be, like, literally you're sitting there. It's like, okay, I can't go outside, but there's so much cool stuff I can do, you know, with the time that I have and make the best of it. I mean, literally think about, like, what if this were your last day? Like, if you had like a crowning achievement with what you're to do with these last, you know, 12 or 24 hours, would you want to be like, you know, sitting there like being pissed off and ranting on Facebook? Or would you rather have sort of that last day as a testimony to your life, doing something fun and rewarding and connecting you with people you love? And I'm all about the latter, you know, even though I've got my dogs, I know people, but dogs at least. So we're bonding really well. So go ahead, Ken, what were you going to say?
I think a situation like this, you know, the answer seems obvious or, you know, the answer seem, we know what we want the answer to be. But in situations like this, I would like to think that people would come away, myself included, with a little bit better perspective on everything, like a better, bigger picture, more focus on, you know, questioning your priorities, things like that. But will that really happen? Or is it just a reflection now? And it's kind of a, it's a question that can't be answered. In a sense, it's kind of rhetorical. We would like to think that that's the case now because we're all a little bit more reflective, I think, people in general. But what's going to happen in another couple weeks or another couple months? Does everybody revert back? Do they take some portion of, or some small percentage, to look at things differently? And whether it be, you know, this is, you know, we're in the bodybuilding industry. That's what the podcast is supposed to be about. So the people listening have that commonality. So are you going to approach your bodybuilding endeavors differently? Are you going to approach your financial situation differently? That's probably a little bit different in the sense that that's your livelihood, that's providing for your family. But the things that we enjoy doing are the things that we do that could potentially pull away from things that are arguably far more important. Is that going to change anybody's perspective down the road, or is it just going to be business as usual? I would like to think that the longer this goes, as bad as it can be economically and you know, the restrictions, I mean, you know, you're going to have, you know, we can get into suicide rate and things like that. You know, all of these things are going to factor in depression, relationships. You know, there are some people who do not need to be at home all the time with their spouse. For fuck's sake, it just is not a good idea. And those people are out there.
We're talking about murder rates going up here dramatically over the next couple of weeks.
Exactly. So I would think that the longer we're in the situation, the more likely it would be that people would come away with a different perspective. But who's to say? It could just all revert back in a matter of weeks, and everybody goes back to their, I don't want to say everybody, but we go back to a little bit more of our self-serving, narcissistic type of view. And, you know, I can't help but add that there are probably kids out there who are really confused right now, thinking, like, they're young, but they're old enough to know, gosh, this is sad. My parents are spending more time with me now because of this impending doom than they do at any other time when, you know, I'm not as important. You got to wonder if there aren't, you know, teenagers or young teenagers out there with that perspective right now. I don't know. Just thinking out loud.
Yeah. Well, the bottom of people's barrels varies substantially. You look at this, like the people who just revert back to horrible abusive relationships or drug use or, you know, gambling or some of the various self-destructive things that people go through, or just being in situations that are just horrible. And so, for some people, they'll come through this and they'll, like you said, worst case scenario, just sort of forget, you know, that it all happened. It won't have any lasting impact on how they perceive the world. And other people, you know, might very well remember these things. And you know, it's always been fascinating to me to try to figure out what it is about individuals. If you kind of look across the sort of spectrum of people that you can run into, that makes some really people really resourceful, and others not really resourceful at all.
Right.
And some of them will respond to this kind of thing, and they'll be like, you know, they will it'll increase, it'll open up their heart, and they'll start paying attention to their finances, and they'll be like, you know what, I am fucking lucky that I escaped this. This could have been another couple weeks and I'd have been fucking screwed. And for them, they smartened up, so to speak, and things they were doing, and they're good to go. And then other people, you know, you've seen this. It's kind of sad. They just keep on doing the same shit. And the bottom of their barrel is really fucking deep before they'll spring back. So it's going to vary, I think, a lot. But hopefully, like on the, like, for instance, the hypothetical with kids and their parents, is that the parents will then also reflect back on that too. It's like, you know what? This was a really nice opportunity to spend some time with my kids. Mm-hmm. And I really should do more of this. Like,
hopefully
this is a chance to see, you know, this is why I work. I don't live to work. I work so I can live. And part of living is having a family and spending time with people I love. So this is like, as kind of a vast backwards, ironic, as it is, the fact that people can't work is giving them more time to live mm-hmm. with one another. In a certain way, even though we can't go to Walt Disney World and do typical, you know, types of vacation-y things that people would do when they're trying to have good family time. So,
I had that moment back in somewhere in 2011 where I was working at the bank and I had a lot of clients and I basically had no life. I mean, really, I had no life. I was working 7 days a week, and my kids were three. And I said, you know what, here in 5, 10, 15 years, they're going to be growing up and I'm going to miss the whole thing. It's going to be by in a blink. And that's one of the reasons why I left the bank. I mean, there was more than that, but that was a big looming reason why I left the bank. I was working at Chase and I had to drive through a lot of traffic, like 45 minutes to an hour, about an hour each way. And I remember toward the end of my banking career, I actually transferred to another bank. I actually went to a bank called Huntington Bank because we had just built a house literally like 2 miles down the street from their headquarters. So I figured, man, I can save 2 hours a day. That's 2 hours. Like, I remember thinking, I can do a lot with 2 hours. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I actually changed my jobs to get 2 hours. Then I realized even that 2 hours just isn't enough. So I've been pretty fortunate. I've spent a lot of time with my kids, and then we homeschooled for 2 years too, until our kids started driving us batty, and we sent them back to school.
I remember that, yeah.
But I'm pretty thankful. I feel like I learned that lesson, and I do a lot with my kids, and Alexander is doing all this fun stuff with yo-yos and Rubik's cubes. If you guys watch my videos, you see that. And but we're having a good time now, and I try to convey in my videos, I put these little things in there, and it's funny, man. Like, I want to say like 6 weeks ago, Alexander was doing a yo-yo trick. He's really good with yo-yos, like really good.
I've seen some of those.
It's pretty wicked. So I recently just got him a coach. The coach is Gentry Stein. That's the yo-yo champion. Like, he's the world yo-yo champion. He just started with, like, he's this guy. Like, he's never, anyways. So I was like, you know what? I think Alexander would probably think this is pretty cool if I stuck it in one of my videos.
Yeah.
So I put a little, like, 7-second shot of him doing a yo-yo trick in one of my videos. And my guy Noah calls me, and he's like, John, have you seen the comments on the video? And I was like, no, what's up? And he's like, well, there was like 600 comments and 500 of them are about Alexander and the yo-yo. So
more yo-yo, less bodybuilding.
Oh, it was crazy. So every time I do a video now, if I don't have Alexander doing his Rubik's cube or yo-yo, people just start yelling at me. But I don't know, man.
We found your gimmick. It's a good gimmick. It's just badass.
Scott and I have talked about that for years. Like, we don't have a gimmick. We're just trying to grind our way along. I think you're right, Scott. I think we finally found the right gimmick.
All right. Yep. There you go. You're going to have to bring him to your seminars. Like, and you guys are going to go headline, you know, on the posters. Well,
I took him, like, 2 months ago, I took him over to Lifetime. And just to put him through some jumps and some plyos and things like that. And we're walking down the middle of Lifetime. And this guy goes, Alexander, I love your yo-yo tricks. I don't know who this dude was. Like, I literally have no clue who this guy was. He's like, Alexander. Right. So we walk around, we do our thing, and then we're leaving. And another guy, Alexander, man, keep up the yo-yo tricks. And you should have seen his face light up. His face lit up, man. It was really cool. As a dad, it was a really cool moment for me. It was awesome. It was pretty special. So, yeah, man, I mean, to your guys' point about connecting with your family and things like that, it's there's no amount of money that can replace it. There's no amount of anything that can replace that time with your family. And if you have some time now to take advantage of it, I mean, this is a golden opportunity, you know? Yeah. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah. Instagram, I told the story of the Buddhist farmer. I won't go the whole thing, but it's the Buddhist farmer whose horse goes lame, and then everyone's like, oh, that's awful. He's like, maybe, maybe not. And again, he wins a horse at the local county, and then his son gets bucked from the horse, so his son can't ride the horse to take care of the farm, and then his son doesn't get conscripted in the army. So it's like all these things that people say, oh, that's great, that's not so great, that's great, that's not so great. And I'm thinking about that in the context of people maybe now who, like you're talking about, sort of in the vein of what you did, John, sort of voluntarily might lose their job and be forced to do something different. That and when they, in this context of like, okay, now like what am I going to do now, maybe they pick a profession because they've been able to spend a few weeks with their kids where they can spend more time with their kids, and they just change jobs, and it sends their life and their kids' connection, and their kid becomes a YouTube celebrity down the road, who knows. And it would all stem back to the fact that they lost their job because of this crazy viral pandemic, which you think is the worst thing ever, but you never know. It could be good. It could be bad in the long run. So there can be some things that come from this, which we immediately balk out and say, like, I lost my fucking job and blah, blah, blah. I'm so pissed off. This is awful. But if you look at it and say, you know, this is an opportunity to recreate from the ashes, so to speak, to rise from like the phoenix and do something new and different with your life. And it's time to step back and get some perspective too on like what the important stuff is.
Mm-hmm. But I think there are some people out there who would love to take risks and actually aren't terribly happy in the position that they are, whether it's where they live. I don't know how many times I've heard from people over the years, oh man, I don't know how you picked up and moved to here or there. Gosh, you know, you're older. Why would you go from Colorado to Florida? You're 50. Well, they say those things, but they won't take the steps to actually do them. And I think sometimes situations like this will force a hand. And you make a good point about the job, because there are a lot of people who just aren't very happy doing what they're doing. So they could lose that job. And I understand that's a very scary thing. I remember when I went to training, and you know, you're talking about the year, it was damn near the year that I had to step back too, because in what we do, the more you work, the more I sit in front of the computer and engage and work, the more money I will make. It's so directly related, it's scary.
Sure.
Yep. So then you're looking at it going, well, you know, you're justifying it going, well, I'm sitting here, I'm providing, I'm busting my ass. Oh, you're such a hard worker. Oh, my goodness. And yet you don't have the time for your kids. So there has to be that balance. You almost have to really change your perspective to where your time is money, as cliche as that sounds. And the time that you spend with your kids, I will tell you, there is nothing worse than empty nesting. Mm-hmm. There, well, let's put it this way. There's nothing worse than empty nesting when you really like your kids. And my wife has been an absolute, for almost the first year we were here, was an absolute fucking mess being without the kids. So when you talk about, people get caught up in this raising kids and how stressful it is, and then all of a sudden, just believe me, when you say you blink and it's gone, it is fucking gone, and there's no getting back. You could talk about grandkids, you can talk about spending time with them when they're adults, but it's not the same, and you won't know it until it's gone, and you will just long for the holidays, and you will long for the hugs and kisses, and just it's so, I don't even like to talk about it because it's kind of fucking depressing, but enjoy what you got. You don't know what you got till it's gone.
I think so. Not a lot of people know this, but I actually walked away in 2018 from my teaching job at a major university. I walked away from a research position at a major university so I could take care of my mom in the last months of her life. Because I am a workaholic. I define myself by work. I define myself by accomplishment, achievement, everything else. it was excruciatingly hard. But in actually going back to something Dave Tate always was like, what's your why? And my why was always my family. So when the decision had to be made, yeah, it was an ego blow. I wasn't sure about financial stability or any of that stuff. But my why was always my mom. It was always my family. And so it was kind of like picking up, moving across the country to a life I had no clue what I was going into. It was terrifying. I had meltdowns. And I think that's where it's like, it's going to be emotional. It's going to be really fucking hard for some people. But it will get better. I kind of learned during those times to not think about it as being a good thing or a bad thing, just seeing it for what it was. Just like, I'm just going to see this as a neutral. This is not good. I don't need to label it. It already know it can suck, but it's already also like the best thing I could have ever done. So I just need to take each day as it comes and just literally create certain types of routines and barriers to help myself get better, to feel better, to feel more settled, working with certain types of like, I mean, first person I tracked down was a therapist when I moved to Ontario because I knew it was going to be hard. I knew it was. I wasn't going to kid myself. But I can say, like, in all honesty, career-wise, some people would argue in, like, the academic world it was, like, self-sabotage. For me, though, I still 100% say it's the best thing I've done. And I also knew the life I was living wasn't sustainable. I wasn't healthy. I could just see my health continuing to tank. I was struggling to, you know, find a sense of goodness some days because I was just so run down from working like two full-time jobs. It was awful. I mean, looking back, sure, I made money and I got to travel crazy places, but that's not what I want my life to be defined as. So I think even for some people, this experience could be an opportunity for them to ask themselves, like, what do you really want in life? And are you really happy? Or are you just thinking that you're happy because of, say, material objects or whatever it might be? And like at the end of the day, what's your why? What's your purpose? What do you want to, like, you know, if like Scott said, if today's your last day, what do you want to be known for? And I can honestly say that, like, I am so much happier than I ever was doing all these crazy successful things. Because I have my health, I have my happiness, I have social relationships. I actually sleep at night. It's incredible. I never used to do that. And I got to live my mom's last life, like last days with her. That's something I am so eternally grateful for that.
Mm. Yeah, and your boyfriend, Scott McNally.
Yeah, so too.
Yeah,
I'm the lucky.
You know what, Victoria? One of the things that I've learned in the last since September is, it is caregiving is something that not very many people are good at. But people who are good at that, it is hard. And I'll tell you how I know that. It's hard, and I'll tell you how I know that. I'm not good at it, but my wife is. I've talked to Scott about this. I never really told people, but my wife's mom fell and broke her hip. She's 85 back in September. And so she had surgery and she was in the hospital and she got delirium and she knew who Mary was. It was really bad. So they placed her in hospice. And Mary said, well, you know, why don't you come home? So live with us. So Mary's mom and dad, they still live here with us right now. And to watch her caregive, from the time she gets up. Now, we have nurses come in a little bit and help us, not so much now, but to see the amount of positivity that she brings her mom, like yesterday, her mom just all of a sudden said, I don't think Jim, that's her husband, I don't think he likes me. We're like, why do you say that? She's like, well, just because I just, you guys have to just look out after me. Anyways, to see somebody who's a true caregiver like yourself, I'm not sure there's anything that's more of a blessing than that. Like I put that, like when people talk about skills and talents, that is at the very top of my list. There's nothing above that. There's no amount of intelligence. There's no amount of athletic ability. Nothing is above that. So that's pretty impressive that you did that. And my wife does that. And I just want to tell you that I think that's amazing.
Thank you, John. Yeah, no, it was, for as difficult as it was, it was such a blessing. Like I spent time with my family, just raw and pure. And when I knew my mom was like terminal and it was getting down to it was then like, how do we make some sense of joy? So like we went back, my dad digitized old home videos, and each night for 15, 20 minutes, we watched my childhood and my sister's childhood. I did these questions. So I've got two young nieces that unfortunately they're not going to grow up with a grandma. And so I did questions for my parents on Sunday nights. Sunday was always family night growing up. So I was like, I'm going to reinstate that. It's now family night. So for the last 6 months, we did family night. And I'd ask my parents questions like, what was their first date? And they each had to answer it. And I've got it all audio recorded. So my nieces now have this because my mom didn't have the strength to write like she wanted to. She didn't have the strength or really brain power at the end to do a lot. So then it was what's her legacy, and being able to help build that and put that together is so special. And it's something that I now can hold on to because her legacy, like I am her legacy at the end of the day. And that now I get to gift that and give that. And the experiences that we had of just like raw bonding, like the last 2 weeks of my mom's life, like my sisters came out, we had my only about 2 hours good with my mom a day. And so it was just the silly fun stuff of that life should be made out of, like going for car rides with six people in one vehicle and an oxygen tank and everything else, or sitting around looking at old photos, talking about just what life is about. And it was something so special. And if people could kind of hold on to that in these times, you can do a lot with your family, a lot with your friends. It is a special time when we take that step back, and that could be now for some people.
Looks like we might have lost. Oh, he's back. We thought we lost you.
No, he's not, John. Oh, John, I thought you meant Scott.
No, I'm still here.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking earlier about a spiel that Alan Watts, and I've listened to so many of these things, I can't even tell you where, in what recording, if it's on YouTube or one of his audiobooks that I've listened to, but he sort of kind of facetiously, but very rightfully talks about the modern day perspective of living to work versus working to live. Mm-hmm. And spending years, literally decades, thinking that, you know, I just got to get to some end point where everything's going to be comfortable and then I'll retire. And then I can do these things. Or there's the old song, The Cat's in the Cradle and the Silver Spoon, and talking about, you know, we'll have a good time then, Dad, and people sort of postponing those important times with their mom or their dad or what have you, and those missing those opportunities. And Alan Watts is like, he basically sort of says, like, so you really think that you're going to, like, buckle down, and this is, of course, an Alan Watts, you know, British accent, but you're going to buckle down and spend like decades practicing being a full-blown workaholic, and then expect that all of a sudden, like after 40 years of that, you can just sort of switch gears and just go, you know, lie on the beach and drink, you know, fruity drinks with umbrellas in them and be satisfied. Like you haven't practiced living whatsoever. You're going to be awful at it. You will have wasted so much time because you're not living now. The whole idea is to live as much as you can, you know, and do the work that gives you life. Some work can be tremendously fulfilling. I'm not saying like don't work. That's part of your life's mission. But we have it sort of backwards thinking that, you know, we can just do all those things and you need to, you know, provide for your family, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But we go overboard where it's just we because it's the nature of our society, we have a value system that places so much value on money and material things and wealth and the car you drive, et cetera, and your status. I mean, Victoria, trust me, that resonates with me. Like when I sort of left academia, there were bridges that were burnt there that could never be built back. And I knew that, you know, but it was worth it to have traveled the road less traveled, so to speak. So yeah, it's sort of a funny thing that that people would think that they could just, you know, all of a sudden like, okay, now I made it, we're good to go, and just flip the switch. It's like, no, you've just ingrained in yourself habits which are completely antithetical to doing the things that you've been dreaming about doing. You got to practice living in order to be good at living, and the whole point is living anyway. So what are we doing when we live our lives in that way? It's to some degree possibly just wasting them. In the worst case scenario. So, yeah. Alan Watts is a is a great insight in terms of those sorts of things.
Well, listen, guys, while I've still got all you here, I do want to ask you something bodybuilding related, at least. We had a bunch of questions that came in. I'm going to ask one because I think that this is something that everybody's wondering right now, especially the guys who haven't had as much experience. I've known people who haven't taken a couple days off the gym basically the entire time that they've been working out. And people are afraid that they're going to lose size. So this is one of the questions that we had come in, but we had a bunch more of them asking something similar. So Andrew asks, how to retain muscle with no gym equipment during the pandemic? And I know, Skip, I feel like you could just roll your eyes at this one. You know what I mean? And be like, oh, come on, just a couple of weeks, you know, just buck up, eat your food, stay on track. But, you know, legitimately, a lot of people, we put so much into this. And especially, like, I remember there was a time for me, man, I'd kind of have, like, a panic attack if I didn't get a meal in, you know, and be like, oh, man, I'm not going to grow, you know? And so I can just imagine if I was at that stage in my training, how I would feel right now, how trapped I could feel if I didn't have the opportunity to go to my gym. So, anybody's open to start this up, but, Skip, I'm really curious to know what you think. And I know John's been putting out a lot of at-home training videos, and I know, Scott, you've got all sorts of creativity. Victoria's been doing a lot of great working out here in the basement, inventing all sorts of stuff. So I'm really curious to hear. Anybody who is wanting to jump in, please do. And, John, I don't know if you're still with us, but we lost your picture.
I got him.
Oh, we don't see him.
Oh, I can see you guys.
Okay.
Yeah, exactly. That's your... 50 megabyte upload, Scott. You said about me rolling my eyes. I kind of do roll my eyes. I think it's a time issue. If it is 2 or 3 weeks versus, you know, a couple months, that's a completely different, two entirely separate scenarios. I also think that people tend to look at it. They have the wrong perspective. Losing muscle is, hypertrophy, atrophy. You don't train for a little bit. You get a little bit flat. Your atrophy, as soon as you train for a week, you're going to blow up again. And if it's only been a few weeks, you're not going to have the aches and pains that you had. And they might have been minor, but your joints, I know, you know, being as old as I am, if I don't try, I laughed and said, the best workout plan for me would be to train every other week, because then my knees, my elbows, and my back feel awesome forever and ever. Hallelujah. So I actually appreciate taking a week off because I feel great at least for a week when I come back. But I think it just depends on the time frame. I mean, we all don't want to lose any ground. Nobody wants to lose any progress. So anything you can do to get you through, you're still exercising. And it also helps to keep you focused psychologically on your diet. I'm kind of an all or none guy, and I've been doing it a long time, but it's a flaw of mine. If I don't train, I don't want a fucking diet. Now, it doesn't mean I want to go out and eat French toast 5 times a day. But I'll go all day and not eat and then go, oh, shit, I'm hungry. And then I'll have a big meal and then go to bed. I'm an all or none kind of guy. And everybody has their little quirks and the ways that they approach things. And it's just something that I've always done. So for me, I want to continue to train because otherwise I don't give a shit to eat. It's more of a chore to me than it is a hunger issue. So just hold on, you know, do what you can to maintain. I think that, you know, these at-home videos, everybody's kind of knocking them, saying, oh, they're not going to do a goddamn thing. Well, they're going to tide you over. Psychologically, they're going to help to keep you grounded. They also will help you to not focus on your potentially shitty financial situation or the things that you're worrying about right now when you have this high level of anxiety. It's almost like a decompression. So it gives you something to kind of sidetrack your brain when there's not a whole lot to do. The most important thing, in my opinion, right now is whether you're prepping for a show that may happen later or whatever, just stay on your diet. And it's a do as I say, not as I do. I get it. But stay on your diet, because if you can get leaner and you do happen to, you know, shrink up a little bit, you're going to get it back in a week or two once you get back into the gym anyway. So stay on track, do something, decompress, and don't sweat it.
I don't really have much more to add, Scott. I think he's right on the money. I mean, we've all competed, taking a week off, 2 weeks off, 3 weeks off. The muscle comes right back. The workouts that I put out were actually kind of hard. It wasn't jumping jacks and burpees. It was you know, was really tough band stuff. Yeah. And listen, just a little stimulation for all the reasons that Skip mentioned. And I see no reason now, as Skip mentioned too, if this goes into 2 months, 3 months, now it gets a little tougher. Hopefully that won't happen, but I just don't really see it as a big deal. I think as long as you're putting some effort in, and even if you don't, even literally, even if you lay around and watch Netflix, the muscle will still come back. Mm-hmm. So
I got a few thoughts on this. One, for instance, if you look at what Eastern Bloc athletes did and have done for many years, like a traditional Matveyev linear periodization model, where they would start off with like hypertrophy, strength and power, like that classical model, like that was preceded by a time of just active recovery, going out and just doing fun shit, like going up, you don't want to go out and do hikes if you're not supposed to be outside, if you got a quarantine going on, but doing things. The things I have my clients do as much as they can is, instead of cardio, do things that increase your meat. And so projects, I've got a client who I've been bragging about when I've done the seminars I was able to do on this last little part of the tour, who is like spending time cleaning out all the stuff, like literally cleaning out the material stuff that she's had in storage for years and getting rid of the energetic garbage that comes along with those things. Hmm. And now she's like building, she's got woodworking projects that she's doing with her daughter. And she's doing like all this cool, like life-giving stuff instead of going and getting on a treadmill like a rat in a wheel and just expending energy for the sake of expending energy. Mm-hmm. So you can do those sorts of things. There's actually a study. It's Bob Sterin, who was at Ohio State at the time, published in 1990, where they did they produced the greatest amount of muscle growth in terms of relative muscle fiber size changes that I recall ever seeing in a paper. And it was over like about 6 months of training. Then they detrained these women for, I think it was like 12 or 18 weeks. And there was, I think they only lost statistically significant fiber cross-section area in one fiber type. And it was, I think it may have been the type, what they called 2Bs at the time, which were the small percentage of the fibers, because they had hardly any of them after training. So literally the atrophy was almost non-existent. And what I think happened is, and this applies to people who are, you know, trying to figure out what to do at this time, is those women just, they trained the bejesus out of them. It was like all lower body stuff, and they were doing like 3 or 4 sets of each exercise to failure, like twice a week, knee extensions, hamstring curls, hack squats, barbell squats, leg press, and like maybe lunges or something like that. It was like a pretty grueling training program. And they probably, after that, became so happy with their fitness that they stayed active. It wasn't like they just then, you know, because the transformations were crazy. They actually, with that, all that muscle size, lost circumference measurements on their glutes and their thighs. So they got leaner. They looked really, really good, I'm sure. So they probably maintained an activity level that helped maintain the muscle size that they'd gotten. Hmm. So staying active, not being a complete couch potato, in and of itself probably helps preserve muscle mass. The atrophy that comes from disuse, or when it's really extreme, is when you have casts, like literally when you're doing nothing, you're not standing up or you're not using a muscle at all because it's been immobilized. That will cause atrophy. Yeah. But if you're staying active and eating enough, you're going to be good to go. And the last thing, and I told a couple people this, and I think I mentioned this on Instagram the other night. I had one experience a long time ago when I got injured when I was playing football in high school. And I was, I did this just outrageously, just really silly summer weight training program. And I was also on the swim team and I was doing passing league. I was literally exercising like 6 or 7 hours a day. I managed to gain some weight, went into the season, and I got injured. A big old thigh bruise in my quad, and I got sick and literally spent a week just sick, hardly eating anything, lying in bed. And I went back a week later and we were doing kind of a maintenance program in the gym, and my strength was off the charts for me at that time. I doubled the reps I'd been using on the few exercises we were doing in the gym, sort of to be just to maintain some strength from the off season. And that's because I was so probably overtrained and at least substantially overreached. And when I just did nothing, I came back much, much, much stronger. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the people, I'm guessing, the people who are sort of vociferating and thinking, holy shit, what's going to happen? I'm going to lose all this size, are probably in large part going to be the same people who may tend to do too much and might actually come back, as, for instance, a lot of people would do with DC training, or they do with fortitude training if they come up with a good taper, come back even stronger and looking mm-hmm. better, you know, a week or two later. So the rest could actually mean that you make a quantum leap forward in terms of muscularity and strength, not to mention, of course, your joints. You know, that could be a great one. Look at Ronnie Coleman. Like, you know, not that he's the greatest person to sort of mimic in terms of your overall career, because he's, you know, he's not doing so well right now musculoskeletally, but he would take, you know, like 2-3 months off, I think, after the Olympia, and get back on the horse and, you know, continue to be the Ronnie Coleman who was probably the best bodybuilder of all time in his prime.
Probably.
I would say so. So, like, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I think that there's, I mean, you guys all touched on a lot of really awesome stuff. I still think that there's going to be people that the mind element of training means more than the actual gains, and that they might be concerned about losing gains, but they're maybe more concerned about losing their mind. Because
most people.
I was that person that, like, if I slept through morning cardio and I had to go to work, I honestly had the conversation in my head of, like, do I really need to go to work today? Like, yeah. Do I really need to? Because I could call in and cancel that client so I could do my cardio. Because I was so rigid with my thinking of what movement meant. There's been some really cool studies around trauma and connecting to the body. And so the way that they look at this is for, like, PTSD survivors, is that an incredibly important thing to do every single day is to connect to their body in some way. They start doing it through, like, yoga practices, for example, first thing in the morning, and that it becomes this, in the connection to that actual visceral connection to movement becomes this really, really important tool to actually help them begin to work through trauma. Same thing with people that have kind of like these exercise therapies for certain types of coping skills, whether it's through overcoming addiction or through grief or whatever it might be. So I think movement, it's something that we can redefine. It can be mean so many different things. And that I know from being a meathead at one point in my life that it is hard. I mean, bodybuilding is in some sense about rigidity, both with the fact mm-hmm. that we're focusing more on, like, strength and hypertrophy and gains, not so much about mobility. It can also be, though, like, you know, your reps and your sets and your training regimes and your diet and everything else. Like, rigidity is kind of what makes a really good bodybuilder in prep. So I think that from that aspect, just trying to redefine what moving and movement is. Also, like, using this time to work on imbalances or work on something that, like, you never, like, so many people I've worked with over the years are like, yeah, you know, like, I'll roll and do some mobility stuff on my off days, and then they still don't. Well, this could be a time to actually work on that stuff, or to work on rehabbing a nagging injury, not just by doing nothing, but by doing, like, you know, some banded, I don't know, like, internal rotation stuff, doing stuff that, like, your physiotherapist gave you 4 years ago and you still haven't touched. So I think if we kind of switch that aspect, and that there's other ways to challenge yourself if you are somebody that is kind of a rep set guy. I actually, John, I told Scott this story the other day about that time that you absolutely blew my mind with your agility and doing the ninjas, oh, yeah. The fatigue ninjas, I think they were called.
Oh, the kick, the push-up and then jump yes. up near out push-up?
I have never seen anybody move as fast as you did, and you did, like, the 10 sets under a minute. And I was like to Scott, I'm like, see, there's a way that clients can still challenge themselves. Like, if there's somebody that gets kind of that endorphin rush or that high about doing some type of crazy feat, I mean, it doesn't just have to come through, like, squatting a lot. It can come through doing something like what you did. And you, like, to this day, my mind is still blowing about how fast you did those.
Oh, you should see my vertical leaps.
It's insane. It's insane.
I'm like a big ball of fast twitch muscle, and people are like, slow down your reps. I'm like, no, yeah. I don't want to slow down my reps. This feels good for me.
Yeah. And I think that, like, even other things, like, I mean, when I downsize and I intentionally lost a lot of muscle. It was so bad for my ego because I was like, fuck, I should be able to squat more than this. I should be able to do this. But then what I ended up doing was I changed the way that I looked at what I was doing. So instead of like looking at a squat and being like, okay, I'm going to squat this for, say, I don't know, like 5 sets of 8 or whatever it might be. It was like, okay, I'm going to put the squat at the end of my workout. I'm going to do time under tension. I'm going to do all, you know, these new challenges. Yeah. And we can do that same thing, I think, with at-home training, like adding in isometrics. If you're still doing, if you, like, say you only have body weight stuff, it's like, there are so many ways to make body weight work ridiculously hard. If that's what you need to get that endorphin rush, to get you feeling good, to get you getting connected to your body. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that's my 2 cents. It's, Scott and I are blessed. Like, we truly are privileged that we have what we have for equipment wise. And I can totally recognize that. It is such a blessing. At the same time, there's been points in my life that, like, I've done the water jugs. I've done the bands. I've literally done like the prison workout. There was a great video on YouTube of a guy in France that ran a marathon on his balcony over the course of like 7 hours, just pacing back and forth and back and forth. It was insane. But he had to set out for a goal, and he did it.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, one way to look at this, and this is like just sort of twisting one's perspective around, is if someone said, what if you didn't have to work for 2 weeks? What would you do with your time?
Yeah.
And it's like, it's like, well, you can't, like, people are like looking at, like, I can't work, I want to go to work, but it's not an option. Like, so think of it like, what if you didn't have to work?
It's like spring break again. You're a kid.
Say what?
It's like spring break again and you're a kid.
I know, it's a super snow day, you know, like it lasts and lasts and lasts. So you could do whatever you want with the time, you know?
I would probably pontificate on Facebook, but that's just me, I guess.
Well, there you go. That is an option.
All right, guys. Well, let's wrap this thing up. I appreciate every single one of you. Thank you guys for hanging out and making our day a little bit better. And thank you for sharing this with everybody who's out there who's been watching, because I feel like, you know, we're all and this is something I've been thinking about. You know, we're all lucky to be in a position where we can reach out and we can put positivity out there, you know, in the world. And I think right now it's important that we use that for the good, you know, because I think that there's a lot of people out there that need it. So I'm really grateful for all you guys. I appreciate you.
Yeah. Thanks for making this happen too, Scott.
All right, guys, everybody who's watching, thank you much. We didn't really get to a lot of questions, but I think this was way better. We had Victoria, we had Mr. Meadows over here. And of course, Dr. Scott and, well, Skip. I guess we had Skip too. Thanks, guys. I'll see you.
All right. Stay safe, everyone.
You too, bud.